Fred Film Radio, Turin Film Festival, Italy.
Angela Cerbi, Fred Film Radio from the Torino Film Festival. I'm in connection with Fedra Fateh. Good morning, first of all.
Good morning, Angela.
Fedra, you are like the deputy director of the 38th Torino Film Festival, and your connection with the Torino Film Festival starts many, many, many years back. Because
yes,
you attended the festival the first time, I believe, together with the director Amir Naderi. And then
yes,
it's where you met Stefano Francia-Dicello, the festival director. And then you kept in touch. And how come that you were summoned to be deputy director to the festival?
Well, it's actually an interesting story. So I had stayed in touch with Stefano all these years, and we would see each other at Venice, often again with Amir Naderi. And last year, in between, you know, my work as a corporate attorney, I wrote a book. It was a kind of satirical response to the Me Too movement and all the conversation around gender equality. You know, I'm 50 years old. My family is from Iran. And I had every freedom and opportunity. I've worked all around the world, in China, in Japan. I did Kung Fu in Shanghai. I did karate in Tokyo. So I've had the good fortune of really being a very free woman and having every available opportunity to me. So on the one hand, as an Iranian, I feel both grateful for my freedoms and disappointed that here we are in 2020 and a country like Iran, you know, fights over the decision as to whether a woman can show her hair or not. So when I was in the States coming back from work in Tokyo, I took a few months and I wrote a satire. It's called The Mating Manifesto, an immodest proposal on love and sex. In fact, it's a serious book, but I wrote it in a kind of funny way because I think, you know, people are more receptive to a powerful and controversial conversation if you present it in a more clever and entertaining way.
Oh, yes.
But because I'm an attorney with a serious job, I didn't want to use my own name, so I used a pen name, Mickey Gladwell. And I sent the book to Stefano and many of my friends just to have their feedback. And so Stefano reached out to me and he said that he loved the book and that he appreciated, you know, the themes that I shared in the book. And this was before his appointment when he was being considered. He said if it was okay for him to include my name in his proposed team. This was in December. I said with pleasure. And then when he got the assignment in January, he reached out to me and said, could you help us bring a more international perspective to the festival as well as a social justice perspective? So that's how, you know, the collaboration began.
So, and this is how you build with Stefano your role as deputy director.
Yes. So actually, I have to say that it's really a credit to Stefano and his open-mindedness, because obviously there's so many qualified people who come from the film industry whom he could have selected, but in fact they created this new position so that I could have a role. And again, it really reflects Stefano's innovation and creativity and support of diversity, which, by the way, are the very themes of the Torino Film Festival, which, you know, for over 35 years has supported new voices, diverse voices. So here I am, an Iranian-American attorney, a woman, and Stefano was bold enough to bring me into the team. So it really is a credit to Stefano's openness, innovation, and creativity.
You have brought some new like blood, as we can say, into the festival in terms of, as you just said, gender equality, and especially in the composition of the official jury for the international feature competition. So I wanted to talk with you about this. How did you build up this jury? How did the festival choose those members, and why?
Well, when we were starting in January, you know, in the film business, it's both relationships are very important, and you know, big names, their calendars are booked, you know, years in advance. So we started in January. You know, Stefano sent me a list of names that he wanted to invite for the jury and the master class, and it was heavily weighted towards men. And I said to him that, you know, the Oscars has just received a lot of criticism for being very white and very male. So I think it's important that the Torino Film Festival both respond to the times and anticipate that this issue of gender equality is really getting new attention. So it turns out that the Torino Film Festival had signed last year the gender equality protocol in cinema, but it really didn't get a lot of attention. So as we were discussing, you know, not falling into the habit that is true in every industry where they call, you know, the famous old man who's been doing it forever to fill one of the key positions, we thought in the spirit of the Torino Film Festival, why don't we be more inclusive, more diverse? And then it was, in fact, Stefano's idea to be bold enough to say, well, let's have an all-female jury.
You were talking about masterclasses. The Torino Film Festival this year has some masterclasses that are actually classes of cinema for professionals and students, not like fake masterclasses, like interviews, you know, dressed up like masterclasses. How can you tell us something about these masterclasses? How are they going to work, and why those people were chosen to be part of it?
Yes, well, again, building on the themes of the Torino Film Festival under Stefano's leadership, you know, we are committed to diversity, collaboration, and innovation. So, of course, Stefano has a long career and expertise in cinema. He has a relationship with Alexander Sokurov. So, you know, we wanted to honor, again, you know, the obvious icons and masters of cinema in that sense. But we also wanted to not fall into the trap of just inviting, you know, nearby Europeans to come and tell familiar stories. Mm-hmm. So similar to that spirit, the master classes that I have curated, there are three of them, they reflect really what my role is, which is, again, to bring a diverse perspective, more international, and then with the social justice component. You know, there are so many great filmmakers, and there's something to learn from all of them. But our orientation this year is, how does cinema impact the real world? How does cinema inspire people to bring positive change? You know, the irony of having the festival this year during the pandemic, while all of us are sitting home thinking about, you know, whether our leaders are adequately representing us, you know, why are women bearing the brunt of, you know, the layoffs relating to the corona pandemic, all of these kind of complex mm-hmm. issues. Why have we not thought more carefully about, you know, infectious disease and collaboration? So these are all issues that are really affecting all of us in a very, you know, profound way. So our master classes are with people who have made films that are not just to be entertaining, but they're really to advance the social consciousness. So the of the three that I'm curating, the first is called Film and Social Justice: How a Film Can Raise an Actionable Legal Issue. So, you know, we can see that sometimes, you know, politicians, the UN, journalists, often don't have the courage or the opportunity to really call out, you know, unacceptable behavior, including behavior that violates international law. So this year, we have the honor of inviting Tari Amirani and Walter Murch. Walter Murch, as you know, is one of the masters of editing in cinema. He's done a Godfather movie, The Conversation, The English Patient. So he has been working with Tari Amirani on a film called Coup 53. It's a documentary. It's about the coup that the U.S. and U.K. government led in Iran, removing Iran's democratically elected leader, Mohammad Mossadegh. And it really shows that it's the catalyst for 70 years of instability in the Middle East, which has contributed to terrorism, which has contributed to trillions of dollars of money from the U.S. and European governments being spent on security and counterterrorism, monies that could have been saved, that could have been used for healthcare, education, infrastructure. So this is a film that is exposing a very current, complex issue. And by the way, the film is being blocked. So as I mentioned yesterday in the press conference, in addition to my responsibilities for the festival as an attorney, I'm helping the filmmakers so that we can have the film available to screen and have the people that are trying to hide this historic truth from being shown to have the film aired. This shows the intersection between my work as an attorney and our work here at the festival.
I wanted to ask you something about the mission of the film festival that you already said something earlier about, which is the mission of this year, Torino Film Festival. In your opinion, how can a festival be effective in moving forward, in giving advices and in giving light and suggestion to the audience, and how can it be done in this specific formula that we are forced to use this year?
I'll answer the first part. So let's think of the movie Parasite that won the Oscar this year. It was a Korean movie, beautifully shot, very entertaining, about the very complex issue of economic and social inequity. So the power of cinema is to have a creative storyteller tell a story that is universal, that can be understood everywhere, and that can shine a light on issues that we all understand. So one of the crises of our time is economic inequality.
Absolutely.
And instead of watching yet another Hollywood film about, I don't know, the mafia, here we have this unexpected film unifying people all over the world, even though there's a language barrier. So I think the power of cinema and the language that we've used for the festival is to unite, inspire, and guide us. So a film unites us because even though it's made in one language, sometimes a language that's not very common, like Korean or Farsi, it still has the power to bring the world together with a common voice at a time where many countries and many political leaders are using very exclusionary language. So when we think about the refugee crisis, or we even think about the pandemic and America and China and Russia fighting with each other, I think audiences recognize that we are one human family, and there is no art form that conveys that important message better than cinema.
Yeah.
So this is how cinema unites us. Cinema inspires us because filmmakers are able to imagine things before the rest of the world can. So if we think of the history of cinema, a film like Thelma and Louise, Joker, these films that brought to the surface issues like homosexuality, interracial marriages, mental health, all of these complex issues, our leaders are not really doing a good job of addressing these issues, but our filmmakers are. So this is how filmmakers can inspire us, and they guide us by offering a vision that can help us in the real world move forward, take inspiration from their film, and then have a kind of action plan to bring change in the real world.
Well, this is the best answer you could give, you know. You really summed up the golden rules of why we still produce movies, we still do festival, and we still want festivals and movies to go on and be seen. I want to end this talk with a kind of a personal question. Which kind of cinema goer are you? Which are the movies that you prefer?
I had the good fortune of being friends with Amir Nagari for over 20 years. And so he was, a friend and also like a teacher. So he has shared with me, films that, let's call it, are a little bit more obscure. I have to say, I'm generally not a big fan of Hollywood blockbusters. I don't appreciate the violence and the noise and the you know, and the unintelligent, you know, scripts. But, you know, I love movies like everybody else, so I have a kind of eclectic taste. Mm-hmm. I'll just share with you a few of my favorites. One is, you know, an Akira Kurosawa classic, but that is not very well known. It's called Dodeskaden. And
course,
it's, have you seen that movie?
Yeah, back in the day.
So, you know what's funny? I saw it many, many, many years ago, but I still remember the unforgettable, you know, young boy who is a huge fan of trains and the way he mimics the sound of the train. You know, I've spent many years in Japan, but it's just, and then if you remember, you know, it's this community of low income people who are homeless and the bonds and the, you know, and their creativity and the suffering and the joy that they're able to create. It's one of those films that even if we've seen 1,000 films, it's a film that we'll never forget. Another one of my favorites is Tangsir. It's a film by Amir Naderi. It was one of his first films that he made, and it's a story of how when the powers that be suppress innocent lives, even the weak, poor man will stand up and fight for justice, and then society may turn and support him. So it's the story of a poor, illiterate man who is taken advantage of by the, you know, the elites of the community. And then at a certain point, he's willing to die for justice and for honor. And then when he is willing to fight the powerful leaders, suddenly the village turns and supports him. So I think that, you know, the social unrest that we're experiencing, whether it's in New York or in Torino, I think we need to be mindful that we cannot suppress people's rights and dignities, because at some point someone is going to step up and say enough. And when that person steps up, everyone else will then find the courage
absolutely,
to follow
yeah.
that person. So, you know, those are just two. I could go on and share many others. But I wanted to say something about you know, the online format.
Yeah.
I was, you know, during the press conference yesterday, I didn't have a chance to answer this question. It was directed at Stefano. But as you are in radio, I think you will appreciate my answer as to the implication of watching movies online versus in the cinema. Yeah. I think of, you know, radio versus listening to music live. In New York, I live above the Metropolitan Opera and the New York Philharmonic. Thanks to my mother, I have a great love for live music, both classical and jazz. So I think of it as a little bit like the radio. You know, we listen to classical music or jazz on the radio, but it doesn't mean that we won't go to a live concert when the opportunity presents
itself.
Yeah. So I don't think that watching movies at home takes away from the joy of getting together with friends and watching movie together. But one final thing that I'd like to share with you about the power of cinema. You know, my family is Iranian, but my name is Greek. How did I get a Greek name? Well, my mother, some 55 years ago, saw the film called Phaedra with Merlina Mercouri when she was a young woman in Iran. And she said to herself, one day when I have a daughter, I'm going to name her after this actress. And, you know, in those days, imagine 55 years ago in Iran, it was typical for families to name their daughters after the daughters, you know, of the prophet, a kind of religious name. And my mother had the boldness, because of her great love for cinema, to name me after a movie star and a movie. So just to tell you, I think I was branded from the beginning to be, you know, to be just exactly the idea of the universality of cinema, the inspiration. I mean, my mother, you know, was so inspired that she named her child after a movie, just to tell you how powerful cinema is.
And that was a sign, and here you are.
Yes,
working
here I am.
In a film festival.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. Thank you very much to Feder Fateh for this very insightful and interesting talk. Feder Fateh is the deputy director of the Torino Film Festival, which is going to open on November 20th, its 38th edition. I'm Angela Cerbi for Fred, the Festival Insider. Thank you very much.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.